Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Audrey Sanchez, the executive director of a new nonprofit organization, Balanced. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
From One Green Planet, it looks like animals have Jon Bon Jovi on their side. The rock and roll frontman, who launched his Heart and Dagger clothing line in November, has removed all leather from his collection. Instead, Bon Jovi is opting for vegan leather, a move that came after he learned the horrific truth behind the leather industry. This is a big win for animals and the planet. People are becoming increasingly aware of the environmental and animal welfare issues with factory farms. But when it comes to the leather industry, the connection isn't usually made. The reality is that the leather industry is very closely tied to industrial animal agriculture and exists in a mutually beneficial way. As long as cows are being killed for their meat, farmers will capitalize on this and sell off every part of the animal. Once the hide or skin has been harvested from the slaughtered animal, there is a three-stage process it must undergo to become leather. The remaining flesh is scraped away and the hairs removed, after which the skin is treated, or tanned, to ensure it doesn't decompose. The skin is then thinned, re-tanned, lubricated, and if required, dyed. This process uses several chemicals and toxins, including ammonia, cyanide-based dyes, formaldehyde, and lead. Some of these products are carcinogenic, and all are environmental pollutants, which end up being released into the air, ground, and water supply. As people learn the truth about the brutal and unsustainable leather industry, many companies are creating innovative alternatives to animal products. For instance, Green Banana Paper, a startup in Micronesia, created a cruelty-free leather made of banana fiber. And another startup, MycoWorks, is making leather from mushrooms. And Pineapple is also getting in on the cruelty-free fun. While it's unclear if Bon Jovi will stop wearing leather himself, we still applaud the compassionate decision of his clothing company.
The Department of Homeland Security announced that it will exempt itself from environmental and other laws to rush construction of the border wall and prototypes near San Diego, California, endangering critical habitat and ignoring public input. The waiver would speed construction of replacement walls, 30-foot high prototypes, roads, lighting, and other infrastructure without any analysis of environmental impacts. The area south of San Diego is surrounded by hundreds of communities and contains critical habitats for several endangered species. In January, President Trump issued an executive order directing Homeland Security to construct a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The administration claims it has the authority to waive environmental, natural resource, and land management laws under several laws passed by Congress. In June, the Center for Biological Diversity expanded its lawsuits against the proposed border wall prototype construction in San Diego to include the replacement of 14 miles of existing border wall. The lawsuit challenges the Trump administration's failure to perform any environmental analysis or release any information about the project. This region of coastal San Diego County contains wetlands, streams, and other rare wildlife habitats, as well as critical habitat for numerous endangered species, including the Kino checkered spot butterfly and coastal California gnatcatcher. A recent study by the center identified more than 90 endangered or threatened species that would be harmed by the proposed border wall construction along the 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexico border. The center and U.S. Representative Raul Grijalva from Arizona, the ranking member of the House Committee on Natural Resources, first sued the Trump administration in May over the proposed border wall and other border security measures, calling on Homeland Security to conduct an in-depth investigation of overall border security environmental impacts. Beyond jeopardizing wildlife, endangered species, and public lands, the U.S.-Mexico border wall is part of a larger strategy of ongoing border militarization that damages human rights, civil rights, native lands, local businesses, and international relations. The border wall impedes the natural migrations of people and wildlife that are essential to healthy diversity. For more information, go to biologicaldiversity.org.
Eliminating meat from a terrible diet doesn't really make it any healthier, according to a pointless new study recently released in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. The study found that participants whose mostly vegetarian or vegan diets included a lot of processed foods, sugary beverages, and French fries were more likely to develop heart disease or die than people who avoided processed food, even if that meant eating a little meat. Previous studies have found that people who adhere to a vegetarian or vegan diet have better cardiovascular health and live on average 10 years or so longer than people who eat the standard American diet. But those studies tend to lump all plant-based diets together into one group, which includes vegans, vegetarians, and junk food vegetarians. People on a well-planned vegan diet may actually live even longer. The researchers used data from the Nurses' Health Study, which included over 73,000 women, the Nurses' Health Study 2, which included over 90,000 women, and the Health Professionals' Follow-Up Study, which included over 43,000 men. These studies work in part by asking participants every 2 to 4 years what they eat and how much. The researchers looked to see who developed heart disease, who had a heart attack, and who died of heart disease during the course of the study. They found that people who ate a healthful plant-based diet tended to have reduced risk of heart disease compared to those who consumed an unhealthful plant diet. People who followed a healthful plant-based diet but included a reduced amount of animal foods were less likely to die than those who followed the unhealthful plant-based diet. They found that reducing meat and dairy consumption by a couple of servings a day could maybe lower the risk of heart disease. The researchers suggested that more people would be able to adopt these moderate dietary changes and hopefully benefit from them rather than the extreme change to a fully plant-based diet. Focusing on eating unprocessed vegetables and the like as much as possible, with some meat and animal products included, could be a much more sustainable plan for Americans accustomed to the meat-based diet. The study isn't perfect. Like most nutritional studies, it's observational. The researchers watched people going about their lives and waited to see what happened to them, which makes too many outside variables to know for sure that diet caused a difference. And the survey data from these sorts of studies is notoriously unreliable. People tend to forget about what they've eaten over time or simply lie about it to make themselves sound healthier. Of course, heart health isn't the only reason to avoid too many hamburgers and French fries. Folks worried about their contributions to climate change can drastically cut their carbon emissions by reducing their meat and animal product consumption. And of course, reducing meat and dairy consumption reduces the suffering of animals. Stay with us. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Audrey Sanchez, the executive director of the new nonprofit organization Balanced, that was started in collaboration with NutritionFacts.org. Balanced is dedicating to fighting for responsibility in our food system by demanding that schools, hospitals, workplaces, healthcare facilities, food companies, and corporations follow the latest scientific research to provide healthier food choices. Our conversation with Audrey Sanchez is next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Audrey Sanchez. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Audrey, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in vegan nutrition?
Absolutely. So this story goes way back, almost 2 decades. I grew up in a small town of about 1,500 in the middle of Kansas. More cows in the county than people by many, many, many thousands.
Wow.
I grew up about 2 blocks away from the sale barn, actually. So at the ripe old age of 14, as rebellious teens are wont to do, I said, I'm vegetarian. And my parents said, cool. So let's figure out what it means to eat a healthy vegetarian diet, because they were well aware that it could just be potato chips and Oreos, which are delicious
vegan
in moderation, but certainly not the fuel a growing teenager needs to eat well.
Okay.
So my interest in nutrition started at the same time as my interest in being vegetarian. I wanted to do it well. I was an athlete. I wanted to maintain high performance. And so we drove 60 miles to the nearest mall, nearest bookstore, and bought some books on vegan nutrition.
Wow. How nice to have such supportive parents.
Yeah, they're great.
Balanced is a relatively new organization. When did it get started?
Yeah, great question. We our official incorporation date was the last day of January, but we have only been rocking and rolling full speed ahead since about April, the third week of April. So about 6 months old.
I read that you partnered with Dr. Michael Greger to start Balanced. Greger's one of our best past guests on ACT Radio. We've had him about four times, I guess.
Oh, wow.
So how did you get involved with Dr. Greger?
So I was, prior to this position, working as the Vice President of Education at Mercy for Animals. So in addition to helping create videos that expose animal rights issues, the core of my work was getting pro-veg or healthy veg content distributed to folks around the world. And in that position, I work with a bunch of folks who help us create content. Dr. Greger approached me about starting this organization, thinking how he could take the education work that he's doing with Nutrition Facts and channel some of that energy into advocacy, so really creating change at the institution level. So the idea started flowing, the partnership, the strategic plan started almost a year ago, not quite a year ago. And from there, we really figured out that to have the change we needed, we would launch these campaigns to get healthier foods in schools and hospitals and places where people too often don't have access to the food they need.
Yeah, it's really surprising that when you look at the fare that they serve in hospitals, especially the food that they're serving people that are already having health issues, it's just almost unbelievable. They think they're serving healthy food. I'm sure they have nutritionists at the hospital that are preparing the menus. So how are you going to try to get them to shift to the more plant-based products or completely plant-based, or what's your plan
there?
So
Balanced is an advocacy organization. We recognize that there are just tons of highly qualified folks in education that could go into these hospitals or these food service companies and retrain folks and re-educate them. And there are actually a lot of folks doing that. We view ourselves as sort of the urgency behind making this change happen. So we actually launch some pretty high-pressure public awareness campaigns to let consumers know that there are food service companies or hospitals who aren't thinking as critically about health and nutrition and what should be on the menu as we deserve, especially in vulnerable places like hospitals. So we are a bit more of a strong arm in the movement than we are a facilitator of learning.
It seems like there's going to be a lot of obstacles faced, not only with hospitals, but with schools. The school lunch program has become a dumping ground for dairy products, and big dairy has so much money, you know, and they're filling our schools with the government cheese and chocolate milk. How can we bring about change in schools?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we like to think one level above individual schools. So we take a look at school districts, powerful school systems in the country, and we say, who is providing those schools with the menus and the foods that those schools are serving? And what responsibility do those companies have to put student health before their profit? And those are the companies that we launch these campaigns against, informing consumers, making sure parents understand that student health at the school level is an absolute concern. But when it comes to the people actually designing the menus and making decisions about what's put in front of students, there's a level of disengagement. There's not the concern necessarily for student health in the way that parents would expect from a school. So it's really for us about changing the purchasing and the menu creation at a level above the individual schools who very frequently don't actually have a lot of autonomy when it comes to making those choices.
Right. And Audrey, I'm sure a common response is the kids won't eat healthy food. And, you know, they're worried about trying to maintain, you know, kids, their focus levels and their energy at school. And I get that they want to make sure that they at least have a full stomach in order to be able to function better intellectually. How do you come back to someone who says, you know, the kids just aren't going to eat healthy food?
I have a few responses that range from the indignant to the gentler. I'll start with the indignant, which is really underestimating what kids want and what kids need. And the Jim Clare response is there is a ton of evidence to show that choice architecture, i.e. what's put in front of students, how it's displayed, the emphasis it gets on the menu, or the way that the school markets that food has a huge role in what students will pick. And so, of course, there will be a handful of kids who will never eat broccoli. But prepared in the right way, presented in the right way, there is a lot of research actually coming from the person who is probably the foremost expert on this is a man named Brian Wansink. He does choice architecture and nudge behavior theory, showing that if you display it properly, if you communicate about it properly, kids are all in. They're still developing a palate for what they will and won't eat. And as long as it's tasty, they'll get on board.
Yeah. And it's such a critical point in kids' lives. We don't want to put them on the path where they have the choice to eat Cheetos every day or Takis or whatever.
Pizza.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then it, and then it becomes a pattern for the rest of their life and become a victim of the healthcare system, you know, for many years after that.
Absolutely. In addition to what's served in the lunchroom, the resurgence of schoolyard gardens is just another data point to show kids want to be involved in food choice and eating stuff that has flavor and exploring flavors and learning about it. I was a former teacher. I was in K-12 education for a decade, and I saw firsthand kids wanted to eat the carrot they grew or wanted to taste asparagus. Many had never experienced it, and when presented with the opportunity, I think most people would be surprised at how eager kids are to learn about food.
Well, and another thing about kids is they're almost always empathetic towards animals, and they haven't really drawn the connection between living animals that they see and interact with and what they're being served to eat, that was once an animal. I don't know if you guys are going to go there because that's kind of a harder psychological lift, you know.
Absolutely. So again, not doing any education work, we're not really focused on that, but I'm happy to bring my daughter on your show sometime and you can interview my 3-year-old who routinely chastises my father for still eating animal products.
They just don't, like you said, given the choice, I think kids would make a good choice for themselves if they had more information available to them.
Absolutely. Right.
And I like that you speak to the school gardens too, because food waste is also a major problem in this country in terms of wasted resources and, you know, maximizing the amount of calories that we can get out of all the food and all the work that goes into producing it. So I think kids are definitely less likely to waste their food too when they've seen how much work goes into it and spending their time on it. I'm curious. Are there any great school districts? I know that we've seen some developments in Los Angeles and New York. Are there any particular that you think are really leading the charge?
Yeah. So in addition to Los Angeles, I think New York is poised to have some big things happen, even bigger than they've already had. Oakland is a big school district that has adopted 20% meat reduction efforts. So in the same vein as Los Angeles, they do a Meatless Monday, which has implications for hundreds of thousands of meals served just one day a week, which is huge. There are a few student-led advocacy and coalition groups trying to get healthier food or more plant-based food on the menu in some school districts in Connecticut, one in New Hampshire, that have actually made some waves in the food service industry. They're taking note of students who want healthier food.
And there's even a place in Lubbock, Texas that has a vegan cafeteria at their university.
Universities are a prime place to make this change happen. In addition to serving an enormous amount of food, universities actually really respect the student opinion and what students want. And at Balanced, we see our position with university students as being sort of a coalescing force. So if they want to make a change happen at their university, we provide the campaign resources, we do some training, we make sure that they're able to communicate in a respectful but direct manner about the health implications of the foods that are currently being served to university students all over the country.
Well, I know that like at our university, we have Sodexo, you know, one of the giant food server corporations. Are you working with people like Sodexo to try to get them to incorporate more vegan and vegetarian options? I know every time when I request a special vegan meal here on one of our campus events, you know, I usually get the same exact thing every time. And, you know, it's fruit and a salad and some kind of grilled veggies on some
right.
kind of bread.
Yes.
I know exactly what I'm going to have for every produced meal. So if you guys could work with them.
So funny that you ask. I call that the vegan special, french fries in a salad, in a dry salad. We're currently working with Aramark, which is a major food service company. Our current campaign is encouraging them to reduce the amount of meat and dairy and eggs that they're serving and replace that with, you know, best nutrition evidence recommended, whole grains, fruits, vegetables. And we intend on working with every major food service provider in the country, given the just enormity of meals that they serve. Compass serves 9 billion a year. Aramark's about 2 billion a year. Sodexo's up there. Just the number of meals that are consumed by those customers is mind-blowing. And we believe if they make this small change, the implications for health would be huge.
Yeah, because it's definitely hard to make the right decision for what to eat in a healthy way when you go to the cafeteria and you have, you know, 35 options that are basically terrible for you and one that looks okay. And, of course, the 35 right. that are terrible for you look, you know, awful great to eat.
Yeah, they smell good. They're prepared well. It's a prime example of companies knowing what is most impactful for their bottom line, which is, you know, greasy fried food that smells great. And when people are in the state of hunger, you know, that physiological stress state of wanting to get something satiating right away, that they'll put those front and center and sell a bunch and, you know, not too many of the other foods that would really have an impact on the quality of people's lives.
And you also mentioned that you can be an unhealthy vegan or vegetarian, too, if you're just focusing on french fries and cheese pizza. You know, that's not a good way to get animal-friendly and plant-based diet either.
Certainly not.
Liz was looking directly at me as she said that.
No, I wasn't.
I'm just kidding.
I love a good french fry. I am not above a good french fry. Wow. I can't have french fries every meal.
You know, I was curious, sort of switching back to the hospitals and the cafeterias there. I would think it would take a lot of, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think of how you would, the best way to go about getting change in the cafeterias. It seems like you'd have to get a lot of the public health organizations to support you in that. I don't know if that's true, but if so, are there any that are sympathetic to trying to change the food that's served in these hospitals and recovering facilities?
Sure. I mean, there are a number of organizations that have established resolutions or put out policies that indicate the food being served in these locations is not good and needs to be changed. I mean, the American Heart American Medical Association, the American College of Cardiology, Kaiser Permanente, the Mayo Clinic, all of them have resolutions or policies that say plant-forward diet, emphasize these healthy things, reduce as much as you can the amount of animal products in your diet. It's just the folks on the ground making decisions are potentially not inclined to take, you know, a resolution from the AMA and implement it day to day. They're looking at their bottom line, and food service companies are saying, hey, we'll give you X number of chicken strips because it's cheaper. It will benefit everybody more than if we really put an emphasis on patient health.
Well, it's great that you're having some positive experiences already because, you know, we just recently screened What the Health here for the Vegetarian Society of El Paso. And, you know, we've had them on the radio, the show before. And it was disheartening to see so many of the health-related organizations having no idea about what level diet and have no desire to try and address what people are eating in a way to combat all the myriad of health problems that they're facing.
Certainly. Yeah. And I'm sympathetic to what potentially feels a little hopeless, like consumers are going to choose what they want. Because to me, that feels like a neatly packaged story that the food industry has sold a lot of folks and doesn't give enough credit to the fact that people want to feel great. People deserve to be healthy. And the responsibility is making sure the foods that you serve promote that. And that might mean shifting some of your food policies or changing some of your menus and learning how to do that well. But if, you know, Aramark, for example, had a profit of $250-ish million last year, they can figure it out. If I can figure it out, they can figure it out.
Well, I think another obstacle that you'll probably run into or could run into is people say, well, you can be healthy on a diet that includes limited amount of animal products. I mean, that is an argument that we hear routinely, you know, when you try to press people, they're saying, well, you can be healthy if you just don't overdo it on those products.
Well, and Liz, the way I feel about that is that if we can get people to reduce meat and to make that commitment, then it'll be easier for them to go a little further with that.
Yeah, it's certainly a continuum. If I could press a button and get everyone to eat the healthiest foods known to man all the time, I certainly would. Until then, I would hope to shift small amounts of the unhealthy food to the healthier ones. And as people see the health benefits of that, you know, people are really inclined to follow their own self-interest. And the healthier you eat, the better you feel, the more motivation you have to eat healthier. I firmly believe at least in that cycle.
Audrey, curious, where can our listeners go to learn more about helping you all at Balanced, and also maybe what we can do individually, if there are things that we can do in our own communities in terms of getting hospitals or school districts or any other major food serving places to change the way they're serving their meals?
Yeah, great question. So there are a couple places that you can go. The first is our website, which is balanced.org, so balanced with a D.org. You could go to any of our social media pages. The handles are at Get Balanced Now. That's on Facebook and Instagram. And then on Twitter, it's getbalanced_now. So you can find out basic information at those places, follow us, stay up to date on our campaigns. On our website, there is a place to sign up for what we call our Balance Plate Alliance, which is really the strongest advocacy tool that we have. It's an email listserv where folks can sign up and get 3 to 5 emails every week with 60-second actions they can take to help hold food companies accountable. So that might mean sending a message to Aramark telling them you want healthier foods in the hospitals near you, or posting on social media, getting your friends involved. Very, very quick, painless actions, I promise. I wouldn't do it if they took longer than 60 seconds, so I promise you they take less than 60 seconds. And then we have a current campaign against Aramark to get them to serve healthier foods in our cafeterias, and that's droparamark.com.
We've been talking with Audrey Sanchez, the executive director of the nonprofit organization Balanced, which is working to improve our country's food system. We appreciate your time today, Audrey.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been so great.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks for all that you do.
Thank you.
Now that school's been in full swing for a couple of weeks, you might want to check and see what kind of diet your children are being served up at school. Remember, you can go to balanced.org to find out more information, or you can check out the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website.
And that's VSEP for the Vegetarian Society of El Paso, .org. And you'll also find a schedule of all the upcoming events we have this fall.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.